That's the great James Cotton. If you know that sound, you know it's him, with his band, with Coastal Blues. James Cotton, of course, on harmonica, and S.B. Leary on drums, James Pee Wee Madison on guitar, Martin Fierro on saxophone, Mike Fender on bass, and Wayne Talbert on piano, and James Cook also chiming in on guitar. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Friday, October the 4th, and the status remains decidedly quo in Washington, with no agreement yet to end the stalemate now in its fourth day. House Republican leader John Boehner this afternoon announced a bipartisan agreement to fund a few more essential services affected by the federal shutdown. But the White House has not moved from its position that it will not negotiate either on the shutdown or on tinkering with Obamacare as conditions for talks on raising the government's borrowing power to cover its $17 trillion debt burden. We'll be talking about the debacle in Washington. We'll be picking up from where we left off yesterday. But first, a lead story about a big fight on a little island, Sapelo Island, just off the coast of Georgia. There's where a tiny community, a very tightly knit community of people who are called Gullah, and we'll talk about that, the Gullah folks, one of the last remaining communities of direct descendants of slaves and freed blacks in the South, they have a mighty fight on their hands. Attorney Reed Colfax is representing the group, and he joins us now. Thank you, Mr. Colfax, for being with us.
Good afternoon.
Could you describe what this big fight is?
Absolutely. So let me back up a little bit and give your listeners a little bit of the history and the geography of what we're dealing with. So Sapelo Island, as you mentioned, is a small island off the coast of Georgia, about halfway between Savannah, Georgia, and Jacksonville, Florida. And its history is that back before the Civil War, a slave owner named Thomas Spalding had a cotton plantation on this island, apparently a very, very successful cotton plantation. And then, and of course, had a number of slaves that worked the cotton plantation. After the Civil War, many of those former, now freed slaves were able to actually purchase the land that made up Sapelo Island, created their own communities, and really had a thriving livelihood there on Sapelo Island. Over the years, some very wealthy land speculators, one being Howard Coffin, who is famous for his work in the automobile industry back in the 1910s and 1920s, purchased, and it really wasn't a purchase, really took the land of Sapelo Island from some of the former slaves, and then he in turn transferred that land over to the well-known R.J. Reynolds, who then took that land and then took even more from some of the slaves that remained there. So by the time you got to the 1960s, 1970s, really there was just one remaining former slaves, now descendants of slaves, community living on the island in this area called Hog Hummock. And the rest of the land for the island had really been stolen from them, taken from them through trick and artifice, and so they were left in this one small area. When R.J. Reynolds died, the land passed to his wife, who then sold the land to the state of Georgia. And so today, when you look at Sapelo Island, you have this one very small, one of the last remaining truly intact Gullah Geechee communities in the country. in sort of the center of Sapelo Island and the rest of the area owned by the state. So you have 40, 50 now residents who live there. And the number is as small as it is because the McIntosh County, which Sapelo Island is in McIntosh County, Georgia, and the state of Georgia have been systematically denying services to the residents of the island. So when you talk about water services, roads, garbage services, sewer, the things that most of us take for granted as we live in various states in this country, those just simply were not available on Sapelo Island. And then a critical aspect of what made life hard on Sapelo Island was there is a ferry service operated by the state of Georgia, but the last ferry back to the island at night left the dock at 5:30. And what that did is it prevented anybody living on the island from having a full-time job on the mainland. Of course, there are really no jobs available at all on the island. So if you wanted to make a living, you had to work on the mainland. But you couldn't have a full-time job because you couldn't get back on the ferry at night. And so all of these issues made life extremely difficult for the African Americans living on Sapelo Island. And then perhaps what is the biggest issue to hit the island happened about a year ago when McIntosh County raised their property taxes. Now, we've all had times, with those of us who have owned property, where we've seen our property taxes go up. But on Sapelo Island, the property taxes went up by hundreds and even thousands of percent. So people paying bills of $500 a year for property taxes were suddenly facing $5,000 a year property taxes or larger. And what it has done is essentially prevented these folks from being able to remain on their land on Sapelo Island because they simply cannot afford the property taxes. And what it appears to be is that this is actually a very intentional and concerted effort by state of Georgia in McIntosh County and the developers who want to turn Sapelo Island into a vacation home resort island like you see up and down the coast there, and really just a complete destruction of the history and the Gullah Geechee culture, which is so important and so rich, but soon will be gone if this fight is not won by the Sapelo Island residents.
Well, you've given us a really wonderful context, a comprehensive overview, so we understand and appreciate the context of your fight. But isn't there one interesting piece about this island in that when it changed hands, it also fell under a federal directive that it was the residents on this island were not to be removed by some false means like raising the taxes, that they had special dispensation under federal law?
Well, there have been proclamations and declarations along the lines that you are discussing in terms of the purpose that we have, whether it's a federal level, state level, or county level, of wanting to preserve the culture and the history there. But there are less clear rules of law that require that something like this, that the property taxes can't be raised. So the county actually has the strongest statement where the zoning ordinance that applies to Sapelo Island says, as a county, we should not take any action that will threaten the population that lives there and will allow uses that will drive them off the island. So, of course, what they are doing is what they, being the county, are doing is directly contrary to their own directive. The state has a similar statement, and it recognizes the importance of the island, the history of the island. And there are there is a federal commission called the Gullah Geechee Corridor Commission that has made a similar statement. But in terms of what the residents can do today, in terms of bringing their claims to court or any other body to be able to get redress for these property taxes, they're really forced into the state system and going before the County Board of Equalization. And the County Board of Equalization is simply rubber stamping what the property assessments are, the extraordinary increases in the property assessments. So, yes, are there avenues for them to fight? Absolutely. And are they trying to go down every single avenue they can to be able to get these taxes reversed? Absolutely. But it is a long fight. And, the county is certainly, as we see from the actions of the County Board of Equalization, which heard the first step of the tax appeals, the county seems to be really committed to keeping these high tax rates, even in the face of knowing that is going to force these residents who have been on the island and their ancestors have been on the island since the 1700s, 1800s, county doesn't seem to care. They're prepared to see them all leave.
One such person living on the island is Sarah Frances Drayton, and she joins us now. Thank you, Ms. Drayton, for being with us today.
Thank you.
Could you tell us about your island, Sapelo Island, and your life on the island?
Well, my life since I've been back to the island is joyous to me. But when I look around and see what has happened through the years with no assistance, the ditches, the roads, and we are even now being charged for garbage collection, and we have no service. We don't get a container, and no one comes and collect our garbage.
Tell me how you grew up on this island, and how did you come to be there? How did your people come to be there?
My ancestors were slaves. They were enslaved by Thomas Spalding, and well, my great-grandmother was in South Carolina, but they walked. The people, when the Civil War started and the plantation owners took the people away, there was a group who wanted to get back to Sapelo, and they walked from Orangeburg, South Carolina, back to Georgia to get back to Sapelo. That's how much they wanted to get back to Sapelo.
How long a distance is that?
That's a long distance. I don't know how many miles, but it's a long distance. And they walked it to get back to Sapelo Island. And today, the property that my great-grandparents purchased has been passed down through the generations and has passed to me. And I want to pass it to my children. But with the way things are going now, doesn't look like, unless we win some of, the taxes has gone up so high.
Could you describe, just to give people an idea of what your little community looked like, businesses did you have, how many churches and schools? Give us an idea of how your community functioned.
We have no schools over here. The children have to take the 7 o'clock ferry to come to Darien to school. We have 2 churches, First African Baptist Church and St. Luke Baptist Church on the island. We have no stores now, only a little convenience store. We have no restaurants now because of the pressure that has been put on people. We just don't have the things that we used to have when there were jobs on the island.
And now tell me about your particular experience in terms of the land that you have and that you want to pass on to your children?
What in particular would you like to know?
What has happened to it? You inherited it, and give us an idea of how it has become very, very difficult for you to hold on to the land.
Well, it's difficult. The things that the ferry, for instance, we have to ride a ferry to get to Sakhalin. We have to do all our shopping on the mainland. It's very difficult. When the tide is low, you'd be surprised how you have to climb up that ramp. It's hard getting up that ramp. I'm 85 years old, and thank the Lord I'm still doing it, but I have to bring all my... We have no stores. Like when I was a child, there was a store that if you didn't want to go to the mainland, you didn't have to, but not anymore. They gave us, we had to take our trash to the dump, but now we have a compactor, but there's no light there. At night, if you don't get everything done during the day, there's no light at the dump site, and it's just not easy anymore, but I'm holding on.
I'm glad you are, Ms. Drayton. I'm certainly glad you are. Reed Colfax, you've taken this case on pro bono. That is, you're not charging anything for your services. Why are you doing this?
Well, I work for a law firm, Relman, Dain & Colfax, where our mission is to try to provide services, legal services, to underserved communities around the country. We do a lot of our work relates to housing and discrimination in housing. And what we see as a firm is that there are many communities around the country that are just unable to be able to pursue their rights because they don't have the resources to do it. And because of the way the laws are structured, if we prevail on cases, we can obtain attorney's fees from the defendants at the end of cases, and that allows us to come in at no charge to victims of discrimination, litigate their cases, hopefully get to a good resolution, but still stay in business as a firm. And so that's the mission of the firm. Those are the types of cases we do. And the Sapelo Island case perfectly fits a model. Here you have a community that is underserved, to say the least. You couldn't make that statement too strongly because there are virtually no services on the island. And you have a community that, because there are no jobs on the island, economically, they're not a lot of resources there, and so they need as much help as possible to be able to preserve something that is valuable, of course, to the residents of Sapelo Island, but also valuable to the rest of us everywhere else in the country. There are people who regularly go and visit Sapelo Island, learn about the history, can see the history, see the descendants of the slaves right there before them, but without help, this history is gone. This community is going to be gone.
Let's talk now about the specifics of the litigation so far. What steps have you taken so far, and what results? What is the status legally now of this case?
Sure. So there are two things that are happening. One is that a complaint has been filed with the Department of Housing and Urban Development alleging discrimination by McIntosh County and the state of Georgia. And that complaint is being investigated. Of course, it's not being investigated as we currently speak because the federal government is shut down. But as a general matter, it's being investigated. And at the end of that process, if the Department of Housing and Urban Development agrees with our assertion that one of the reasons why this is happening to Sapelo Island is because of racial discrimination, then the Department of Justice will file a case on behalf of the Sapelo Island residents. So that's one effort that is going forward, and that relates to the services I've discussed and the taxes. The second effort that is going forward is the residents have appealed their property tax assessments, these huge increases of 1,000+% of the amount they have to pay in taxes. They've appealed that to the County Board of Equalization. Just on Monday, they heard some 80 appeals, and they denied all of them. They didn't send any of the assessments back to the levels they were back in 2011 before this huge increase. And so the next step will be within 30 days we will have to file a complaint in Georgia State Court asserting that the basis on which the assessors did these huge increases was improper and inappropriate. And there are many grounds to believe that. And really the most clear is they are creating these assessments based on sales to outside developers who want to come in, and contrary to what the federal government's saying, the state government's saying, what even the county is saying, contrary to all of that, these developers are coming in to build vacation homes that are going to drive off the Sapelo Island residents.
Has there been any political intervention at all, particularly with respect to the governor, for example, or any other local political intervention on behalf of the Gullah residents on Sapelo Island?
Well, there have certainly been a number of attempts. And when these tax assessments first hit the news and the public more widely saw what was going on, there have been efforts. But no governmental agency has come in at a level to demand that McIntosh County change its practices here. And yes, would the voice of the governor or the voice of someone within the Department of Justice of the United States, would that help in these efforts? Undoubtedly so, but we have not yet had that happen. And we hope that the more that we shed light on what's going on and what this means for the future of this island, that we will start hearing those voices.
How can people help? What can people do to influence, justice here?
Well, at one level, certainly talking to any federal or state representative that has some interest in these issues or has some interest in the geography, so anybody in Georgia, certainly should be contacted, and folks who listen to the show and support the fight that the Sapelo Island residents are making here, those representatives should be contacted. I will provide a website that gives a lot more information than we can do on this show about the history of the island and what the residents face there, and also gives links on other ways that people can help, and that is Gullah Geechee Culture.
You'll have to spell it specifically.
All right. Gullah Geechee Culture, CULTURE, and that all was one word, .org.
And no hyphen between Gullah and Geechee.
That's correct.
Okay, so Gullah Geechee Culture.org will put listeners in touch with more information that they can use to offer help. Mrs. Drayton, I really sincerely wish that, you, especially in your twilight years, you'd be able to see this fight come to a really good and just conclusion.
I thank you so much for the interest you're taking in us, and I do hope that everything works out for us on this island.
We hope so too. Thank you so much, Reed Colfax, for bringing this to our attention and being so great, actually, at providing not only the legal issues that we need to consider, but also to give us a nice historical overview and to give us the ammunition that we can now use to intervene in behalf of the people of this island. Thank you both for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take a break and come back and pick up from where we left off yesterday, right after this. Now, that's some proper blues. That's Wayne Talbert on piano, and again, James Cotton on harmonica, or mouth harp, as it's called. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're picking up on our ongoing discussion of Obamacare, but today I'm taking a particular position with respect to Obamacare, having to do with numbers. It's all about numbers. A heavy, heavy, heavy push for numbers, because as we will discuss, we'll get to that part next week, we'll see how they've planned this thing out and the rationales behind it. Some of it makes sense, a lot of it doesn't make sense, but it is highly political. Now, when the so-called exchanges opened up on October the 1st, they opened up with a particular accomplishment in mind. They had a particular aim and objective as well, and that is to bring into the fold as many people as possible into the Democratic Party. And I'll explain how this is going. The Affordable Care Act really doesn't have a clientele among the wealthy. That's Obamacare is not for the wealthy. We know that. We know that because even Congress exempted themselves, the President and the Senate and the House, they all exempted themselves from having to sign up for Obamacare. So it doesn't relate to the wealthy. It sort of relates to higher income people in a way. When we say higher, I'm talking about in terms of how lay people discuss higher income people. That's people with pretty decent jobs. They really aren't the big pool that is targeted because their jobs would tend to provide coverage. That's people with pretty good jobs. Working class people, poor people, this is the group that Obamacare really is targeting. Working class people are, of course, subject to the vagaries of unemployment and the fact that businesses may or may not be going out of business. They're hanging in by the fingernails. And so they are overburdened. They can't really afford to insure or offer insurance coverage. So that pool is part of the target population. The poor always is part of a target population because they have no other options or few other options, and whatever options they do have will be inadequate. So this grouping, the working class, working poor, and the unemployed and the poor, these are the groups that are targeted by Obamacare. The one thing you should recognize as we go into this discussion is the one thing that Obama's apparatus has been extraordinarily good at. This is the thing that people still haven't been able to grasp fully, is that they literally had changed the science of political science. We saw how great they are at numbers. That is what won them the election, pulled this victory where nobody saw it possible, but they sank their energy into studying all of the permutations of numbers, management of numbers, getting people into the databases. They were very good at that. So they have a database based on the elections in 2008 and in 2012. I'm getting bleed through for some reason.
Right now.
Hello? Okay. I was getting some feedback there. So they have numbers. They know where their people are. And what they see is that the first round of enrollment, and this is according to the Congressional Budget Office, you have at least 7 million uninsured people that they can target. That's a huge number. 7 million. And by 2016, this is the Congressional Budget Office forecasting, 25 million Americans would be part of this pool. That's huge. However, one-third, it is normally, it has been established already that about one-third of uninsured Americans also are not registered to vote. So what did they do? What are they doing? Well, what they've done is integrate the National Voter Registration Act into the business of registering people for Obamacare. They actually have gotten permission, if you will, to merge one function with the other. The thinking is, if we're going to go into these communities, and they're targeted, they are, I mean, heavily targeted, because blacks and Latinos particularly, working class and working poor whites as well, that's the bulk of the people that they're after, and young people, students. If they have an exposure to these people as they register, whether they go out in the communities to find them or whether they find them online when they register, as long as contact is made, the idea is to say that under the terms of the National Voter Registration Act, they can provide voter registration services. So it actually is. It's a voter registration campaign. And it's not really a campaign to say, well, okay, you may register to vote, but the implicit appeal is you will be registering to vote Democrat. You will be a registered Democrat. This is fascinating. This is what they're doing. So Obamacare gives this administration and the Democratic Party a leg up. This fight is so complicated. The Democrats had to prevail. The president has to prevail because this Obamacare plan also is part of the plan to reinforce the Democratic Party, to bring new people in. And these people are actually going to be coming to the Democratic Party through the Obamacare Act. Now, I don't know whether this is a legal thing or not, but this is what they've decided they would do. Now, if you take that statistic of you dealing by 2016, did you hear that? By 2016, what's going to happen by 2016? We will have another presidential election. So there's no reason that Barack Obama has to negotiate about Obamacare in any way, because we do have midterm elections next year. That's very important. The House is Republican controlled, the Senate is Democrat controlled, and the aim is to control both houses. This is why there's this particular demonization going on from the White House. You know, concentrate on Boehner, talk about these extremists in the party, the Tea Party people who have made these, Harry Reid says that, you know, they're anarchists. They're vile, horrible people, and they are to be blamed for the fact that people are losing their jobs or put on furlough, the government is shut down. This is the talk to literally lambaste the Republican Party to such a degree that people look to the Democratic Party as their savior. The Democratic Party is, quote, right. The Republican Party is, quote, wrong. They both are wrong. We know that. They both are out of whack. But in this contest, because the framework of our political system is that we understand it as a two-party system, we don't understand it as anything else. It's a fight between the Republicans and the Democrats. It is discouraging to the Democrats that the polls are not showing a commanding appeal over the Republicans. The polls are showing that people are equally divided in their distaste for both parties. And now this intensifies the attacks because the president does not have so far a commanding lead in terms of popular support for Obamacare or his leadership or the party. So they have to do this thing. I mean, they have to go to extremes because now they have to twist our minds into thinking it is about who is right and who is wrong, who is good and who is bad. It's an up and down choice. You cannot deal with gray here. They have shaped the discussion as black or white, up or down, right or wrong. That's it. But the polls are showing that despite all this effort and the bitter attacks and the vilification and whatever else negative that you could throw into the pot, the people still are saying nobody has this majority support of the American people. Not so far. Forbes magazine reported today, or yesterday actually, that despite all the activity in, let's say, California, one of the major states targeted here, there wasn't one single person who registered for Obamacare. That is huge. So this is how the administration, this is politics, this is how they're doing it. They're not going to tell us this, but part of this whole thing is the people who are really feeling the brunt of things, these are the people that Barack Obama repeatedly has used to do the heavy lifting for the party. So this, even Obamacare is not exempt, especially Obamacare is not exempt. He's targeting these people. They got to get them in by the millions, because it's the only way that this entire thing could work. You need numbers. And where has this Democratic Party traditionally turned for its numbers? To the same communities that it basically ignores. Their priorities are ignored. This is a very good way you know, Obamacare is a very good way to appeal to them, but we know that actually delivering quality medical care, preventive care, quality care to people is not the primary aim and objective of Obamacare. The primary aim and objective is to cultivate long-term, very profitable relationships with insurance companies and financial institutions. If the intent was to provide quality care, we would have seen a whole different approach, but that would have come out of discussions, open and, I'm saying the word, transparent discussions, but that's not how this bill became a law. This was introduced through the back door, and now the resistance is here because, in a way, the tactic used to get this bill into law itself aggravated the Republican Party because they got bested at their own game. Obama outfoxed the foxes. This is the nature of the contention between the two parties. Not that either of them is of any use to the general populace right now. But think about that. Think about the strategy of how people's lives literally are just numbers. They're just numbers in systems. They're just there to fulfill a whole other agenda. African American, Latino, poor white communities, these are the major targets of this combined effort. With the Affordable Care Act, you will be psychologically conditioned to believe that the Democratic Party has given you a good gift. It came at great expense, but look, what a great party. It has done so many good things for you. Now, if your benefactor is in contact with you and saying, well, you know, have you registered to vote? They know who is registered and who is not registered. In exchange for this gift that we give you, why not sign right over here? Or why not change your mind about whatever it is that you're thinking as your political alternative and sign up with the Democratic Party? The Democratic Party is going to have a fight on its hands, and by 2016, these are the marching orders for Barack Obama. This party has got to be completely re-energized and remade with new people who are out there. And this is the best way, the cheapest way, in fact, the free way to go and get them. That's the numbers game that they're playing. It's sneaky, but it's politics. And look where they are willing to bring this country in service of political domination. They're willing to bring this country down, all of them, both parties. Which is why this reinforces, again, the mantra that you hear on this program, which is you have to join forces with something else. if you really are a progressive person, you can't subscribe to this political arrangement. It is distasteful. I want to let you know that on Monday, you should not miss that program. On Monday, we will be discussing how this bill became law, and including how the U.S. Supreme Court made it law. It's not a very pretty picture, but it is worth understanding so that you can know just where your country has come. I don't know what to make of Barack Obama. I really don't, nor the party, because it traditionally has been identified with so-called liberal and progressive and whatnot causes. It's laughable to think of it in that sense, but that's the way it has been seen. But this president, as I said yesterday, this president is responsible for taking the leap that presidents so far have been just loath and terrified to take, which is to bring the party across that hurdle, that line that they never did cross before, of imposing the will of the state on the individual and defiling one of the so-called holy tenets of democracy, which is that you are free to make your choices. Obamacare is not about being free to make your choices. Obamacare is about a whole bunch of things, but health care for people who desperately need it and given to them in a way that they can afford. We will find out down the road that the Affordable Care Act, in many cases, is not at all affordable. It is not care. It is maintenance of disease. It is not preventive care, nor is it going to give people the wealth of choice in selecting the kind of care that they need. Now, some people may say, well, why are you so down on this thing? There ought to be, I have a natural suspicion about politics altogether. But then you see where the allegiances are. Who are the great players in these schemes? What do they stand to gain? And you find that the pattern repeats itself. They have a program. They have their ideas. They have their aims and objectives very clearly defined. They use the power of the people that they should be helping in an unconscionable way to further their personal objectives. This government has taken on the stench that was associated with the Clinton administration. Just pure, a rapacious kind of administration. It's all about making money. It's all about, you know, satisfying the greed of a closed group. And that's where that's their orientation. That's their mindset. That's what politics has become in Congress, which is now largely made up of millionaires. They're not identifying with working people, and so they don't even, that doesn't even enter their heads. They're after a whole different agenda. But it just happens that the people have to be factored in to give the veneer of, you know, that this is done by the book. It isn't. It just isn't. So I thank you for listening to me today. I urge you to, let's see if we can support the people, the Gullah people in Sapelo Island, in their quest to fight the developers and to reclaim their property, their land and property on Sapelo Island. Again, the website is Gullah, G-U-L-L-A-H, Geechee, G-E-E-C-H-E-E, Coalition, Gulcher, what is that? Gullah Geechee Culture.org. Thanks so much. Have a good weekend, and tell everybody again, don't miss Monday. You don't really want to miss Monday. Thank you so much. Take care.